I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today, my guest in the studio is Tim Z. Hernandez, who is the writer of multiple books and a new professor here in the Creative Writing Department at the University of Texas, El Paso. We're very lucky to have him, and we're going to talk about his current project, which, it'll blow you away, not only the scope of the research that he does, but quite frankly, the energy and the love that goes into it. So stick around. I can't believe that I finally reached the age where I can say this and mean it, but kids today are lucky. Seriously, especially Chicano kids. See, because when I was a kid, there was real racism against Mexicans. Not that it doesn't exist, but it was real and blatant. My parents didn't even teach us Spanish because to speak two languages, Spanish and English, was thought of as being stupid. Is that crazy? To speak two languages made you stupid? Only in America. Now Chicanos are embarrassed when they can't speak Spanish. And if you don't understand Spanish, you have, shall we say, less cultural access. I would imagine that 40% of U.S. media, a number I'm entirely making up, has Spanish language material. They have CNN in Spanish, HBO in Espanol, a gazillion radio stations. They even have the Playboy channel in Espanol. But when I was a kid, there was seriously only one Spanish language TV station in all of Fresno, California. And all they showed was boxing and Sábado Gigante, which like today is a 22-hour variety show that runs all day Saturday. But today, Latino kids are proud to be Latino kids. When I was in high school, I had a girlfriend. Her name was Kendi Jones. She was a redhead, mean girl's archetype. And one time she took me home. But before we walk into her big suburban home in an exclusive neighborhood, which I had driven through before in the back of a pickup carrying a leaf blower, she turns to me and says, I have something to tell you. We're standing on the ivory steps of her front door. The door itself is worth more than the house I live in. And she tells me, my parents don't know you're Mexican. They're kind of prejudiced. What? I told them you're Italian, okay? Your name is Danny Chacconi. Now, her parents were, I guess, what you would call WASPs, but somehow Italian was more acceptable than Mexican. So we walk into her house, and her parents are there. Her father's sitting on a wingback chair drinking a martini, his tie loosened a bit, and her mother, tall and beautiful like a TV mom, is preparing dinner. And Kendi says, Mom, Dad, this is Danny Chacconi. And the only idea I really had about what Italians were like was the movie The Godfather. So when I met her father, I shook his hand and said in a thick Italian accent, or what I thought one would sound like, I'm Danny, the baker. Okay, so after I meet her parents, we go to Kendi's bedroom, and she closes the door, and we're making out on her bed. I mean, you know, we're really, really making out. And it blew me away because there is no Mexican parent who's going to let their daughter go into a bedroom with a boy. I was 16 years old. I walked around with a perpetual desire to explore boundaries. But they let me in her bedroom with the door closed and locked. And Mrs. and Mr. Brady are in the other room, and Kendi and I are, you know, we're kind of really going at it. And suddenly her mom knocks at the door. Kendi, Mom, leave us alone. Gah, you kids want to eat dinner? Go away. I just wanted to offer your Italian friend something. We're not hungry. Go away. But tonight, I'm cooking Mexican. I wanted to tell her she's already having Mexican. But see, things were harder back then because not everybody accepted Mexicans the way they do now. And as old and cantankerous as I may sound, kids have it easy today. And today, we have it really good because we have one of the most upcoming Chicano writers in the nation, not only here in the studio with us, but here at UTEP, teaching in our online MFA program in creative writing, Tim Z. Hernandez. Stick around. I am very honored to have Tim Z. Hernandez in the studio today. We're not calling him on the phone like we did the last two times you were on our show, but you're in the studio, and I have really good news as to why you're in the studio. If the literary world doesn't know it by now, they're going to know it today. You are a new professor in the Department of Creative Writing. That's right. Here at UTEP, and we're really glad to have you. Let me give you just a short introduction to Tim Z. Hernandez. You probably know who he is. His most recent book is Mañana Means Heaven, and this book has gotten a lot of attention. It's written up in the Los Angeles Times, on Booklist, in the New York Times. It's an amazing book about Bea Franco, the Mexican girl, and Jack Kerouac's narrative On the Road. It's just a beautiful book. It's a fantastically successful. His other books include a book of poems called The Natural Takeover of Small Things, which just won the Colorado Book Award for poetry. Yeah. Amazing. Does everything you write win an award? Your first book won the American Book Award. Your second book, I think, won the Aztlán, the Premio Aztlán Award. Prize, yeah. Dang, we are so happy to have you here at UTEP. Yeah. Tim Z. Hernandez, welcome to the Three Timers Club. I know we stole that from Saturday Night Live, but you've been on the show now for three times. You, Juan Felipe Herrera, I think that's it. So welcome back.
Three Timers Club, nice. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And welcome to El Paso and UTEP.
Thanks so much. No, it feels good to be here. You know, I've been here now for about a little over 3 months, and it's just a fit. You know, El Paso is just a nice fit for myself, my family. So, yeah, thanks.
You know, that's how I felt when I got here. I'm from California. In fact, we're from pretty much the same area. You're from Dinuba, although the other day you did this fantastic reading at the university, and the person who introduced you said Dinuba.
Yeah, right. The Danube. Cool. They said Danube.
The beautiful blue Dinuba.
Right.
You're from Dinuba, I'm from Fresno, so we're from the same area. But yeah, I felt the same way. Why do you think it is that you, Tim Z. Hernandez, writer, Chicano, human being, feel so comfortable here in El Paso?
You know, because there's a lot of my own family's histories, you know, is from here, from this general area between El Paso and Las Cruces, New Mexico. And, you know, it just, you know, this is sort of, it has a lot of the values and even if things like food, you know, that I grew up eating, you know, it's like, it was always sort of, this is the area that a lot of this comes from. I didn't know that, you know, growing up, you just kind of take everything for granted. You eat the food your mom gives you and you go to the places your parents take you. And then, later on though, in life, as it were, you know, now that I'm 40 years old, it just made sense that, like, coming back to El Paso, the place that I used to come to as a child, and the things that, you know, the stories that I heard from, it just felt right. Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting that you say that about food, because I remember when I was a kid, my mom used to, you know, we'd have taco night, you know, every now and then. Man,
yeah,
we loved
taco
night. You know, my mom would make tacos, and what she would do is she would get the corn tortillas and she would fry them in oil,
right,
and then bend them.
Yeah.
And then she would put a mixture of fried potatoes and ground beef.
Yes.
And then we'd put the grated cheese and then the lettuce and the tomatoes. And it was so good. But you could not find, when I was a kid, food like that at a Mexican restaurant anywhere in California.
Yeah. Right.
But once I came to El Paso about 12 years ago, almost every place that serves tacos is like that. Wow.
Right.
This is where my mom got it.
Totally. That was like with me with enchiladas. My mom growing up, I never knew that whenever you had an enchilada, you didn't put a fried egg on top. Like, that's just how I grew up eating it. That's what I thought
was. And they always
it wasn't until like, yeah, here in New Mexico, it's a thing, you know, and it's like, oh, it makes sense. My peeps, you know, this is where I belong.
Yeah.
Everybody eats like that. Nowhere in California they eat like that.
So. And not to beat this subject to death, but now that you mention it, when I was a college instructor. My first job was at Modesto Junior College, and I worked with all the Chicano students there.
Right.
And that was when Taco Bell just came out with a gordita.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And we were thinking, what, the little fat girl? That's ridiculous. You know, what kind of perversion of Mexican food is this? And then I come to El Paso, and the gordita has been a staple of the diet here for generations.
Right.
And it's but in California, the food was so different.
Yeah.
Although it's changing. You can find machaca now in California.
Yeah.
You didn't.
Yeah, I think that is kind of changing a little bit. You know? Yeah.
So the food and the family. Tell me about where your roots are here.
Well, here in El Paso, where my roots are here in El Paso proper, and also in Las Cruces and Deming, New Mexico. So these three areas, basically. I mean, you know, my father, the whole side of my father's family is all from Texas, but they're from the Rio Grande Valley, you know. So between there and El Paso is where most of my father's side. My mother's side goes from El Paso down to Deming, so it's the New Mexico side of things. Yeah, and then, you know, it's just fantastic to be right here, right next to Juarez, and to be able to drive the 10 and see the big Mexican flag waving at you, you know, come home. So that's
have you
that's
gone
nice.
Yet to Juarez?
No, I have not gone yet.
If you want to go to La Feria, we can go this weekend.
Let's go.
It's awesome.
Let's go.
You say you have roots in Deming. I have a friend who always pronounces it Deming.
Yeah. I heard you're that guy.
I'm talking to Timzy Hernandez, new creative writing professor at the University of Texas El Paso in our MFA program, and author of many books, including Mañana Means Heaven. You were talking about how serendipitous it was that, you know, you're talking about El Paso, you're on El Paso Street, you end up in El Paso, as if things in your life sometimes just are these serendipitous, inevitable blessings. And I was thinking that on the way here to the studio, and I was wondering how to express it. But more than most people I know, you seem to have a life that is so focused on your work, and your work is fantastic.
Thank you.
It's your work is not it goes way beyond just an individual expression of an artist. It's about community. It's about love. It's about I mean, what you did with Bea Franco and that story you tell about her is just heartbreaking. What you're doing with your next project, which we'll talk about in a little bit, all these serendipitous things seem to happen to you all the time.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And like, tell us about the airplane.
You know, when I was doing the research for, well, you know, I think I have to kind of, to talk about the airplane project, I have to talk about Bea Franco a little bit just to give it some context.
Yeah.
You know, Bea Franco, obviously, who was this character, sort of quote-unquote minor character in Kerouac's novel On the Road, you know, had been lost to scholars and biographers for 60 years, you know, who they've been writing about Kerouac and even her name many years, many biographies later, never found her, never located her. And, you know, so the first sort of bit of synchronicity that I call it, was that fact that she lived a mile and a half down the road from my house in Fresno.
And that's after years of looking for her,
writing everybody. I went across the country. I went to New York twice looking for clues for where I could find her and to discover that she lived a mile and a half down that street from my house.
And what's beautiful about that is you had been looking for so long, you know, from this house.
Right.
And then you decided to give up.
Right.
And once you gave up,
That's it. That's how the world works. At least in my situation, that's how things have been working. It's like as soon as I surrender, then sort of that's when it comes to fruition. And so, but at the tail end of the research, you know, in 2010, when I was still writing the book, Mañana Means Heaven, I was at the Fresno Library, and I was actually trying to locate the labor camp that Bea Franco worked at with Jack Kerouac in 1947. So I was typing into the search engine, you know, Selma labor camps, 1947. And this newspaper article popped up and said, 100 people see an airplane fall out of the sky, you know, and it was in Kalinga. And obviously the headlines are jarring. So I read the headlines. And next thing I know, it's the same incident that Woody Guthrie had wrote this famous song about. And I had heard the song sung by Dolly Parton and Willie Nelson and Bruce Springsteen, who I love. But I had never known that this song, Deportees, Plane Wreck at Los Gatos, took place in Fresno County, you know, again, right in our own backyard, where we're both the area we're both from. And so, you know, I thought, well, okay, well, you know, it'd be great if somebody kind of fictionalized a book about these 28 Mexican passengers that nobody knows, these anonymous passengers. Certainly not me, because at the time I was thinking, I'm already writing this book about 1947 Fresno. I don't want to write another book about 1947 Fresno. I don't want to be that guy, you know, writing about the 40s all the time. And so anyways, I put it away and I put the idea away, and then it just kept nagging me. And so I continued moving forward. And then, you know, with the research, I'm trying to locate the 28 Mexican passengers who were killed in this plane crash. So another bit of synchronicity happens when I start to search for them. I can't find them. It's about, you know, a year later I'm looking for them. I decide to talk to a friend of mine who works for the bilingual newspaper Vida en el Valle there in Central Valley in California. And he does an article on it. And I tell him in the article I'm looking for families. It's a long shot, right? I mean, families would have to be in the valley to read this newspaper. And lo and behold, I get an email like 2 weeks after the article comes out, and it's one of the family members. His name is Jaime Ramirez. And he says, you know, I'm the relative of two of the passengers. And then anyways, he goes on and on. So I call him. We talk. I'm excited to meet one of the family members. And I say, where do I meet you, Jaime? And he says, at my restaurant here in Fresno. I say, what restaurant is that? He says, Ole Frijole. It's on Blackstone. And I said,
oh, no.
I go, I've been there since I was a kid. I used to go there. I know restaurant. You know, we all
talk
go there.
Talk about synchronicity. I used to work there.
No.
That was one of my very first jobs.
What?
I was a dishwasher.
No
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You see, that's what it means.
That's amazing.
It's incredible. Yeah. So.
And
yeah.
You know what? What's his name?
Jaime Ramirez.
Yeah. I wonder if he was if we had brushed against each other.
He probably did. Yeah. Probably did. He worked there long before he became the owner.
Wow.
You worked with him.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, we might have washed dishes together.
You might have washed dishes together. Yeah, and so he you know, he was the one. And
but you know, before we get to another that you call it synchronicity, you know, I call it serendipity or fate, because I think that, you know, one of the things I truly believe is that if we are focused, just completely focused on something that is positive, something that we're doing, that the universe kind of conspires with us to make it, to reveal things to us a little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And I think that's just the way the human brain works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we are so focused, we notice things in a way that the path that it leads to presents these things that seem serendipitous, really they're just kind of, like you say, synchronous.
If we're there, focused, paying attention, you know, that it's all around us. I believe that. You know, Matsuo Basho has this great quote. He says, and I'm paraphrasing, he says, you know, sitting here doing nothing, the grass grows all by itself. And I feel like that's the case, right? Mm-hmm. So doing nothing, the idea of sort of just sitting there and focusing on just being present, then we suddenly realize that things are happening on their own. All of these synchronicities start to align themselves on their own if we're just paying attention.
Right. And the project was born out of love, because what do you have, 28 passengers?
28 Mexican passengers. There's
this plane crash. 28 people are killed in it, but not one of them is given a name.
Mm-hmm.
They're just all forgotten in these little unmarked graves.
Right.
But nobody really started to investigate who these people are and what their stories were until you did.
And you know what's, I mean, you know, okay, so I've been asked before by the media that when I've been interviewed, they ask me, you know, how do you feel about the fact that the media didn't report their names? And I said, you know, that sucks. That shouldn't happen that way. It shouldn't be that way. However, what's more startling to me is that for the last 66 years, the cemetery has had access to their names, and yet no one has ever, all they had to do was go to the Fresno Hall of Records to get the names and put them on a headstone, and no one has ever taken that action.
But
66
you
years.
Took that action.
Well, right, but that wasn't my initial goal. My initial goal was just to find out the names. And then when the when the cemetery director gave me the list of names and we're standing there at the headstone, it just was like, a sort of alignment. We're at this intersection of, I have the names in my hands. I'm looking down at this anonymous mass grave. And then I just kind of instinctually said to him, hey, what would it take to put this on these names on a headstone? And he kind of looked at me and said, you know, money. So we raised $14,000 and put a brand new headstone there, and it has the old headstone on it. And it says, you know, the old headstone is this anonymous marker, basically, but we have it there for history. And then we have the new headstone now, which is this giant 4x8 slab of granite.
See, that's what I mean. Your work is rooted in love. I mean, you know, to do
it's
that.
Community,
you know,
right. It's community, it's love, awesome. And openness. Yes. The
and
idea,
then the other, one of the other incredibly serendipitous things about this project is it was a particular type of airplane, and you looked everywhere for that airplane. Absolutely everywhere. Because
everywhere.
You wanted to sit inside of it
everywhere.
And you wanted to feel what it was like to be in that. But you
everywhere,
couldn't
man.
Find the airplane until?
Until I moved to El Paso.
Tell me, what do you mean?
You know, I was at the Tucson Book Festival last year. I went to the Tucson. They have this giant air museum there, and I just found pieces of the plane I was looking for. I couldn't, you know, there was nothing there of the plane. I went to in Fresno, California, in Turlock, which is 2 hours away from where I lived in Fresno. You know, I went there, and they let me see that they have a whole plane, a Douglas DC-3 airplane there, but they didn't let me go inside. In fact, they charged like $150 to get to go inside.
That's
it
crazy.
Or something. So I was like, okay, forget it. I can't afford that. So I took pictures of the plane from the outside and then left, really upset, because I feel I'm at the last point of the book right now, working on it, where I just need to see the inside of an airplane. So I finally decided, heck with it. Came here, moved to El Paso, and looked, and then like 10 miles away here, there's the War Eagles Museum. So one day I went there in the afternoon and met this man who I assumed was a volunteer there. It turns out he was the executive director there, but he was touring me around. And I told him, I'm only here to see one airplane. And he said, oh, well, which one is that? I told him DC-3. And he goes, yep, we have it right over here. It was in perfect condition.
Wow.
It has an amazing sort of exhibit around it. And then I told him, you know, I have yet to see the inside of one. He says, well, today's your lucky day. Come on inside. And he just showed me the whole inside of one. And in fact, I told him, I want to come back here, sit inside the airplane and finish writing this chapter in here. And he said, you're welcome to do that anytime. So,
wow,
yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
You know, it's like, you know, I don't care what metaphorical system you want to use to express it, but it's like this project is really meant to be. It's meant to happen. And I think that's also the case with Mañana Means Heaven. And it's awesome to watch you develop as an artist, and I'm so glad to have you here at
UTEP. It feels like as an extension of those two projects, that just being here at UTEP, part of this faculty, is really another alignment.
When do you plan on getting this written? I guess most of it is written, but what is the timeline for this project? And do you have a title yet?
Yeah, the working title right now is All They Will Call You. And it's based off of Woody Guthrie's song, All They Will Call You Will Be Deportees.
I can't wait for the movie, because that's going to be the opening.
Yeah.
That's going to be the opening song of
the
movie.
All They Will Call You. Yeah, right. It's amazing, man. And so the book, you know, I'm working my way through it. I'm just about done. I figured at least another two more months. I should have it done, complete by March, the latest, March 1st. You know, I'm making a trek into Mexico in January to, it's kind of my last push of research, really, because I've done everything I could so far. I've exhausted all my resources here in the United States trying to find these families. And at this point now, it's just about going into Mexico to actually knock on these families' doors and see if I can get their testimonies before I finish the book. Right. And then what I'll come, and then I'll kind of create, I create this sort of slot in the book where I imagine they will go if I find anything. So when I come back, I plop that in, and then the book will be done.
Well, that's awesome.
At least that's how I think of it'll work. You know,
you know, and mostly when somebody, you know, when we're ending, winding down an interview, I ask people what they're going to work on next. But I didn't want to ask you that because you are so in the moment with this project,
and
I really admire that. So I'm not even going to ask
don't
you what you're going to work on next, but I am going to ask
you. This is the next.
I am going to ask you what it's like to live on the border. I don't think you've ever lived on the border. Yeah. And I don't know if our listeners who aren't from El Paso know how close we are.
Right.
But I, when I come to UTEP, sometimes I can't use my phone because it picks up Movistar instead of AT&T.
Oh, wow.
And suddenly I'm internationally roaming. That's how close we are. We are so close.
Right.
To Mexico, to Ciudad Juarez, that it would be quicker to walk if there were no border to the first, you know, that little neighborhood right here of Mexican houses than to my office on the other side of campus. What do you like about living it, or what's the experience been so far?
Well, you know, I'm trying to do as Matsuo Basho, you know, has suggested, which is to sit here, do nothing, and let the grass grow by itself. You know, I really feel like, you know, being here at this sort of this trifecta in a way, you know, you have this, you have Juarez right here in New Mexico and then Texas, which are kind of three distinctly their own places as I'm witnessing. And yet, you know, at the same time, a part of one another. You know, I feel like my job is really right now just to sit back and listen and pay attention, you know. And I like that. I like that a lot. You know, and then it's rewarding in because of the work I'm doing in my books, because of the place I am in my own life, you know, career wise and family wise and all that. And so, yeah, it just feels like it's nourishing.
You have your passport?
Not yet. Yeah, I'm working on that right now. Yeah, I'm working on that right now. I know.
Because I was going to say, this weekend I'll take you across. We'll go to the Kentucky Club, have a few drinks.
I know. Not yet. Yeah. I'm getting a passport just for the Kentucky Club.
And when is your passport coming in? Because I'm going to hold you to this.
We're like
gonna
in go a couple, like out. In 3 weeks.
Let's do it.
All right.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Tim Z. Hernandez, author of multiple books, and now a new professor here at the University of Texas, El Paso, in the Department of Creative Writing. Tim Z, thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
And you're a three-timer. Don't forget.
All right. Thanks. I'll remember that. Do I get a badge?
The crops are all in and the peaches are rotting. The oranges are piled in their creosote dumps. You're flying them back to the Mexico border to pay all their money to wade back again. Goodbye to my Juan, goodbye Rosalita, adios mi amigos, Jesus and Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane, and all they will call you will be deportee.
For our poem of the week, I have a special guest in the studio, and wait a minute, it's the same guy, Tim Z. Hernandez. Lest we forget, you are an amazing poet, and so
thanks.
We'd be honored if you can share one of your poems with our listeners.
Sure. This poem is called Brown Christ. Yesterday, I saw God, a brown Christ hovering above an onion field, over tilled plains of the San Joaquin, frayed constellation of denim, ox-hide work boot broken at the heel. A curved knife gripped in his fingers, low clouds undulating, hair of broken lemongrass and rodeo lasso, a fragrant beard of perejil. Everything smelled of sulfur and manure. The silos wept, and the snowflakes tumbled tenderly from the day moon, refracting luminous congregations of aspen, with the music of truck dogs howling over accordions, shimmering manna light.
That was Brown Christ, read by and written by Tim Z. Hernandez.
Right.
Thank you, Tim.
You're welcome.
I'm sitting in the studio with Brian Johan Perry and Mari Gomez, who have started a unique project here in El Paso. It's called the Rio Grande Rift. What is it exactly?
It's a new magazine that we're starting, and the way that I kind of describe it to people sometimes is it's a kind of literary slash general interest magazine that engages a little bit more with ideas and larger issues, rather than just relaying information.
Is this a print journal, or is it going to be an online journal, or both?
So the idea is that it'll be both. We'll have some online content on the website, which is www.theriograndereft.com. And hopefully we'll have a few print issues a year. And the print issues will be exclusive, so the content in there is a little bit more substantial, a little bit more research, peer-reviewed. And so we hope to have that aspect of it, too.
So how did this Rio Grande Rift get started, Ryan?
Well, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked. Pretty much reading regular media around El Paso, and we noticed that there seemed to be a big void and a big gap. And in a larger sense, there seemed to be a sort of cognitive dissonance between what we were reading about and what we were actually doing. And we were noticing that some of the most interesting artists and musicians, we wouldn't have known about them had we not just walked across the road and saw that they were playing somewhere or happened upon them in person and realized that that's something that needs to be taken care of.
Okay, I know both of you. I know, Mari, you were an undergraduate in our department, and then you got your MFA in our department. I know you too, Ryan. You've been in one of my classes, maybe two of them, if I recall. And one of the things that I know about you guys is that, for lack of a better word, and I mean this, you know, with complete compliment, you guys are kind of on the edge, the cutting edge of literature and art. What's different about this literary journal from other literary journals? Because there's a lot of them out there. Why do we need this? Why is this necessary? Is it because you're bringing a fresh approach, that kind of avant-garde? You guys just really kind of have a unique point of view.
Well, I think the draft on the cognitive dissonance idea, I think there's plenty of media nowadays via social media or regular media. And media seems to be constructing a narrative, the American narrative, the narrative of Earth. And I'm starting to see that, again, the cognitive dissonance is coming back into play. And I think we realize that who better than to parse a narrative, who better than to analyze certain aspects of our culture, our community, and topical issues than creative writers who've spent their whole time looking at narratives, looking for plot holes, looking for what's missing, what's being implied. Because regular media, regular journalism has a different objective. And their objective is not that. Their objective is the facts of the matter. And the facts of the matter, I think me and Mari both agree, are important, but they're only keyholes into something larger.
Well, this sounds like a great project. How are you going to pay for it?
That's a great question, actually. So we're in the middle of a Kickstarter right now to fund our first print issue.
And how can people go on the webpage to donate?
Yeah, so you can just go to our homepage at theriograndereft.com, and you'll see a link there for the Kickstarter, but you'll also see excerpts from the print issue that we're hoping to put out. And so you'll get to see a little bit of what's going to be in the issue, because the pieces is already written. Everything's done. We just need to kind of get it out there for the first time to establish ourselves a little bit.
Well, I imagine this is going to be a fantastic journal, because I know Mari Gomez and Ryan Johan Perry are brilliant, brilliant young writers. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank my guest, Timzy Hernandez, for joining us in the studio today, and I wish him the most incredible synchronicity on his new project. It sounds fantastic. I'd also like to thank creative writing students, Mari Gomez and Ryan Johan Perry. Check out their new literary magazine at theriograndereft.com. I'm Daniel Chacon. Join me every week for another edition of Words on a Wire. And don't forget, the next book you read may save your life. I'm up on the tight.